The Big Story from the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Hello, I'm Olivia Kwe. You're watching The Big Story. You can subscribe to our channel so you never miss a single episode. 130 workers from yet another food centre are undergoing mandatory COVID-19 testing. At least the process was quick and smooth for stall holders and cleaners from the Telok Blangah Drive food centre. This exercise comes after confirmation that a second worker at the food centre was infected. Professor Teo Yit Ying joins me now. He's the Dean of the Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health at NUS. Welcome back to the show, Prof. Well, Bukit Merah views growing cluster. What does that situation tell us? Are our measures not enough to curb the spread, or are they in fact robust enough that we're able to pick up a lot more cases which could have gone undetected otherwise? Or is it that the virus is even more transmissible than we think?
I think the dominant strain of the virus that is circulating in Singapore, which we call the Delta variant, is definitely a lot more transmissible. And we are only starting to learn exactly how much more transmissible this is. So from the UK, they estimated that the reproductive number of the Delta variant is between 5 to 8. And if we take the higher estimate of 8, it actually means that one person will spread to 8 others after one cycle. And this expands to 64 after 2 cycles and 512 infected cases after 3 cycles. Now, if we compare this with the wild-type variant that the world saw in early parts of 2020, which has a reproductive number of between 2 to 3, we are really looking at 27 infected cases after 3 cycles. So in 3 cycles, one person will spread to 512 other people if that first person was infected with the Delta variant. Whereas previously, we are only looking at 27 others after 3 cycles. And this is exactly what we mean when we say that the virus is now a lot more transmissible. And besides, I use the word cycle. So for the strain that we saw last year, we were looking at each cycle of between 5 to 10 days. But actually now for the current variant, the Delta variant, each cycle now appears to be even shorter, that people can be contagious after only 1 to 2 days. So not only are we looking at the Delta variant spreading to more people, the speed of this spread is also happening faster. So if we come back to your question about whether our measures are sufficient to catch the spread, to curb the spread, it is clear that our measures to get people to work from home, not to permit dining in, effectively curbing social interactions, this have all worked to reduce human interactions and human traffic in public spaces. We have also seen how case numbers did fall to single digits again after about 2 to 3 weeks with these measures. So we know they work well and they can work again. What we need to realize is really that because of this Delta variant, community transmissions now have a much higher chance of being a super spreader event. Previously, we called this a super spreader event, and it's deemed to be quite rare and only happened during very high-risk activities, such as we have large groups of people coming together, karaoke, singing, talking together without masks for a long time. But now it seems that short-term interactions may already be sufficient to seed large clusters. And so I think we really need to change our game plan to stay ahead. And we have done that with our expanded surveillance, testings of large groups of people, getting first degree contacts, their family, household members to stay in isolation for 7 days and more. Or we actually need to start changing our mindset towards COVID-19 as well, if our long-term game plan is to consider this as an endemic disease.
We're all looking forward to Monday when the second stage of Phase 3 heightened alert is scheduled to start. But Finance Minister Lawrence Wong, he said that the multi-ministry task force is reviewing the timing and the scope of when that can happen. Well, that stage comprises an easing for things like dine-in services, gyms and in-person tuition and enrichment classes. Prof, in the event that we're not ready for all of that, do you foresee a hold on the entire slew of measures or just on some?
All the services that we mentioned, such as dining in, exercising in gyms, tuition in person, enrichment classes, all of this involve prolonged periods of interacting within a closed indoor environment. So the risk involved is actually quite similar from a public health perspective. But when we start to think about coping with COVID-19, it has never been just about the public health. It's also about how to balance people's jobs, income, livelihoods, the economy. So some of these services that we talk about may be deferred because the impact to jobs and the economy is lesser. So maybe they can be delayed a bit more, a bit longer. But there may be other services that cannot be deferred for too long without causing substantial economic hardship. I would not want to speculate what would happen other than to say that this is a really difficult decision for any policymakers, especially during this transition period where we are rolling out our vaccines as fast as we can, but yet have not achieved the vaccination level in the population that allows us to open up more confidently, especially in light of the more transmissible Delta variant.
Well, let's talk more about dining in, you know, which is one of the things that, you know, we're all most looking forward to do again. Well, ever since last week, F&B businesses have made preparations to welcome back diners on Monday. But with Mr. Wong's update yesterday, uncertainty lingers. So instead of not allowing dining in services, are there more nuanced approaches that can be explored, perhaps, you know, to allow dining in for groups of two or allow it in outdoor settings like hawker centres with which have, you know, better airflow and ventilation?
As mentioned previously, it's a very difficult decision to make, and it goes beyond the public health considerations. And you mentioned the outdoor settings such as hawker centres. I think it's perhaps useful to highlight that hawker centres themselves may not be entirely free from the risk of outbreaks either, because we have seen that what is happening right now in the recent food centre outbreaks are happening in Bukit Merah View, Redhill. These are food centres that we are talking about. And I think the reason why we're starting to see these outbreaks happening in markets and food centres, or even previously supermarkets and malls, is because these are the locations that people are more likely to congregate now in larger crowds. If we have allowed people to go back to work, or we have allowed dining in or more social activities, actually, we would see equally work sites or work venues or social activities venues to be the drivers of these outbreaks. And because our vaccination uptake in the population is not sufficiently high yet, we would still need to be fairly cautious in deciding what is permitted and to what extent. Because based on the case numbers, especially the unlinked case numbers, I actually think that we can permit some degree of dining in to resume. But this needs to be communicated very clearly to the public that the situation remains very precarious, and we encourage people to dine in only if they are from the same household. So perhaps dine in restaurants or in eateries, hawker centres, if you are within the same household.
Well, Professor, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks, as always, for your time. That was Professor Teo Yik Ying, Dean of NUS's Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health.